Hey, well, good to have you with us this morning. It is Sunday morning. How are you?
Good, Marty. I'm well, and I thought about you when I was walking into the concourse to get into the clubhouse this morning, passing the hot dog buns. You'll be happy to hear there's thousands of potatoes stacked up, ready to go into those infamous garlic fries later today, and soft drinks everywhere. So if you're coming out to the game, you can enjoy some of those items.
Oh, beautiful. And Mario was on last night and said you can now go to the concession stands and be socially distant and actually just get the food up there. Well, I'm glad to hear it. I miss walking down that tunnel, I want to tell you, to see the rutabaga in the morning. So I'm glad,
yeah.
I'm glad you get to do it. Hey, before we jump into baseball, I was thinking about River Islands for a second. And, well, you know what makes it special? Of course, it's one of the top master planned communities in the country. Is that it has so many different price ranges, very reasonable price ranges, and the layouts of the homes, two-bedroom, three-bedroom, four-bedroom, five bedrooms, you can get just about anything you want. That makes it special.
Yeah, I think you're right, and it's one of the why it's one of the top destinations here in the housing market. There's so many options, right? So you're really going to get all types of families and sizes of families in there and price ranges. So we've always talked about how much it has to offer, but you're exactly right. When you go out to look at the homes there, you have a lot of different choices, and that's always good. And anything that we're looking to buy is to have choices.
Yep, you can make an appointment and you can do it that way. But riverislands.com, I thought about that this morning. There's so many different choices, which is really good. Hey, the weather is a little bit of a factor today, and it's good to just check in with you. If it's pregame before the lineup cards are exchanged, it's up to the home team to decide when to start the game. And there's a lot of controversy around that. Stroman got into it with the Mets that they started the game too early. With the rain coming. What's the issue here, and how does this work?
Well, that's right, Marty. You said it correctly. You know, until the lineup cards are handed in at home plate before the game, it's the organization's call. You know, everybody has their resident weathermen that are in conversation with the umpires, but mostly with, you know, the manager here, the general manager, the president, you know, being Larry Bear. You know, it's a big decision that has to be made, and it is in the home club's hands until you turn in the lineup cards, you know. And if we say, hey, look, there's storms coming in a half hour, and we're going to get a lot of rain, it's going to be a half hour delay, you know, we'll push the game back because why do you want to start a game and lose both teams' starting pitchers? And you do get into some situations, you know, it is the weather. You know, you can't predict it perfectly. I remember one time in Chicago, we sat for 2 hours and we didn't start the game. And it never rained. And, you know, so things like that happen. You're dealing with the weather. It's not perfect. But everybody makes the best call that they can under the circumstances.
Well, I know they bring in Greg Elliott, right? The groundskeeper. He seems to understand the weather pretty well.
Yeah, no, he's got his contacts and his satellite, and you know, he's a big part of it. I neglected to mention him, but yeah, he's behind the scenes, not behind the scenes in that moment. He's talking with everybody.
Yeah,
and you know, that he stays in concert with the umpires throughout the game as well, letting them know when a gully washer is coming through because they may have to tarp the field. You know, he wants to let them know, okay, we're going to get some rain. It's going to sprinkle light for a half hour. We should be able to play through it. Or we got a big storm coming. We better get the tarp down right before it happens. Otherwise, this field could be washed out.
Mm. Well, it's going to be interesting today. All right. Well, how was the road trip? This is the first time, you know, back east to Miami and Philly. What was it like for you guys and being on that East Coast trip?
Yeah, I felt a little bit back to normal. You know, the long flight, you know, we hadn't gone last year. It was great to go back east. Miami and Philly, you know, the two negatives there were in Miami. They took the COVID protocols to the highest level I've seen. They had our coaches split up in about five different rooms, and I got written up a couple times with an email with my mask down. You have the COVID police, you know, they're writing people up if your mask is down. I was on the field coaching, you know, and once in the dugout, once on the field. So it was a little difficult to deal with. You know, the facility did not have enough lockers for everybody. They had some of the support staff and training department dressing in the hallway. So that wasn't really a good situation, but the games felt normal. Everything else felt normal getting there. And the other real disappointing item was in Philadelphia. The cheesesteak room was was made into a locker room for players to dress. So we couldn't get the hot cheesesteak right off the grill to order. They had to bring them in from somewhere else, and it just wasn't the same.
That's a big issue in Philadelphia, right?
That's right. And the other issue is we should have swept them. That's the other negative, right? We had them beat, and we couldn't hold on for the sweep. But all in all, it was a good road trip. We'll take 500, you know, any day of the week. And it's tough trip going coast to coast and then coming back here without an off day and having to play the next day and get the first two wins of the series. So that was good.
Yeah, big deal. Hey, Ron Wotus, of course, with us, the third base coach of the San Francisco Giants. Looking at a little bit of last night, this game lived up to it. Well, Gausman, all he threw was splitters and fastballs. No sliders last night. And the other kid, Pablo Lopez, he's tough. This was a good game last night.
Yeah, it was. That's baseball, isn't it, Marty, as we like to say? That's baseball. I mean, I love a well-pitched game where every decision in the game made by the manager or every play is important. You decide to steal a base, whatever you do. Everything is extremely important, and that's the type of game that I love to be involved with. And these pitchers were both outstanding. And unfortunately for us, they strung together that last inning. And, you know, Gause couldn't go anymore. He had a long outing his last time out, and we got a long way to go. He did his job, and we had a chance to try to score a run in the bottom of the eighth, and it didn't work out.
Yeah, well, he had his eight innings last night. The young man hit a home run, Birdie, who's a third baseman. Now, you're close to the third baseman. What do you think of this kid? Because he has not had much success, but he was in there last night and hit a big home run to put him ahead.
Yeah, no, I heard Bales, our pitching coach, talking about, I think that's the first time his split has been hit like that out of, you know, 300 pitches or from the split. Nobody else. And Birdie is the one that did it, and he absolutely crushed that ball. He's a tough kid. You know, I get to talk to him down there at third base. You know, all the Marlins were freezing. You got the kid from the Bahamas over there. They play in Miami. They're all bundled up, and I think the pitcher tonight before, Alcantara, he didn't look the same as he did in Miami, you know, Latin guy. Maybe he was a little cold out there, but Birdie was not. He's from Michigan. He's a gamer. He plays extremely hard. He told me, I'm not cold at all. He goes, I like this weather. So I guess he did. He hit the ball out of the park, and if it wasn't for that home run, I'm sure we would have, you know, won that game last night.
Yeah. Well, the run you did score, let's go to school with the professor, as we love to do on Sunday morning. Was an interesting run that the runner from third base scored on a ground ball to third base. Well, what happened there?
Well, you know, they had the infield back, and we had second and third, and they were playing the infield back by basically conceding the run. But even when they do that, if you don't have a real fleet of foot runner at third, and there's a rocket or a ball hit real hard to the third baseman, it can be hard to score. I mean, they could throw you out at home plate. So you don't treat that as a contact play where you're just going when the ball's you know, hit. You got to see if it's a rocket to third, but you got to get a good jump. You just can't, you know, take your time because the third baseman can throw you out. So two good things happened. Dickerson had a good lead and read the ball correctly, and that was a chop ball. It had, you know, a little high chopper on it. So they didn't have a play at third, and that got us the first run. And, of course, Posey, with a heads-up base running play, he was, you know, deep at third base. He was on second. And as soon as he threw the ball across the diamond, here comes Posey with that speed that he has when he needs it. And he got to third base with less than one out. So that was a heads-up base running play with him. you know, knowing that's the time to take the chance. One out, he's throwing the first, and try to get the third with less than one out. So a heads-up play by him.
Mm. Yastrzemski had a throw to the plate last night that was interesting. It was medium right field. He threw it on a fly, just short hop Buster Posey, who couldn't make the play at the plate. And even listening to some of the commentary, well, on a play like that on the right fielder, do you want the ball coming in on a fly or do you want it coming in on a long bounce? What do you prefer in a situation like that?
Well, I've always told the infielders, when they're in a relay situation, let's say the ball's, you know, in the triples alley and it's thrown to Crawford and he's thrown to the plate. If you're going to throw it all the way in the air, you have to get it there. You can't short hop the catcher. You know, how many times you see a guy's dead at home and it's an in-between hop? That's a difficult play with a catcher with that catcher's glove on. He doesn't have a first baseman's glove, right? So you if you can't get it all the way in the air and be sure of it, you want to one hop it, long hop it. Now, I do like the one long hop. There's more margin for error. You don't have to throw the ball perfectly. You can get that long hop and stay away from the in-between hop. And I think the other thing is if you can't get it there in the air by throwing it more on a line, the ball takes a lot more time when that ball's thrown up in the air, you know, a little bit higher. That runner's going. He's getting a lot of steps when that ball's in the air. So I like a lower throw and with a one hop opposed to a high throw that eats up too much time and makes the play on the fly. Now, to Yaz's defense, I'm sure he thought he was going to get the ball there, and that's mm-hmm. the one time you can do it. You can throw it all the way in it. Sacrifice fly. There's no trail runner, right? No one's going to cut the ball and redirect it. The batter runner's not running. It's a sack fly, so he's going to give it everything he has and try to get the ball there in the air, and it just came up short, and Buster couldn't pick the throw.
I never saw the guy touch the plate.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, you
well,
take
shoot.
It. Yeah, I never saw him touch the plate, but I don't know. I guess
is it too late for replay, Marty? Is it too late for us to do something about this? I don't. Nobody said anything, so I'm sure our phone would have rang in the dugout if our video people, Pat, up there would have seen that. So, it's very possible. Sometimes those things, you know, get missed, believe it or not.
It was crazy, but it was all like a lot of confusion. Well, Brandon Belt had quite a couple of weeks. Whoa, he's running. Does he have a new gear now? Because, look, he stole a base, and then the pitcher ignored him, and he stole another base. Take us through Belt on the base paths.
Well, you know, he's getting better. He had that surgery on his foot. And if you remember years ago, I mean, the last 2 years, his knee was banged up and he had that foot that was bothering him. So he hasn't really run the way he could in the past, the last couple of years. He's still not there, but he's working on it. He's getting better and better. And the other thing of Brandon thinks he's invisible when he's on the baseball bases. This guy, he gets one of the biggest leads. A guy could have a great pickoff move. And I would look at Augie, Jose Alguacil, when he was over there, and we'd say, hey, shorten up, Brandon. He goes, he's not picking me off. And he has guts. You know, he's not scared. And to be a base stealer, that's a great quality to have. So the one base that really, blew me away is it was a 3-2 count. With two outs on the hitter, and the first baseman's playing behind Brandon at first. And what happens is that first baseman stays close to Brandon. Then when the pitcher comes set, they go all the way back to their position. Well, you know, Antoine's telling the runners, you know, you got to get off. When that guy goes all the way back, you get off the base. You take another step. You want to get as far as you can for when he pitches the ball, a guy who hits the ball in a gap or, you know, you can score. Well, Brandon, on this one stolen base, I've never seen it happen. You know, the pitcher kept holding the ball and he kept shuffling his feet. And finally he said to us, well, shoot, I was halfway to second base. I said, I'm just going to go. I feel like I'm in the middle of the field here. And he took off and the pitcher stood there holding the ball. The middle infielders hesitated. They didn't expect it. And he stole the base that way, which I hadn't seen it done.
Boy, very good. It was a great, great moment. You know, the pitcher never looked, and no one ever looked at him, and he just walked into second base. He was part of another play, Woe, and I love going to school with you and the professor, obviously, on Sunday morning. Belt is on third base. It's, I guess, first and third, and the issue is ground ball to third. Does he go to a bust up the double play chance? Does he stay? And it was a very interesting play, and it's a good one to go through for us.
Yeah, and it's a tough play sometimes to read because of all the variables, you know, the batter runner, how fast he is, you know, the fielders, you know, how quickly they can turn a double play. But the rule of thumb is, in that situation, first and third and nobody out, I always tell, you know, the runner, on any double play ball, you're gone. Any double play ball, you're going, because what good is it to stand at third and let them turn two? Now you have two outs and a guy at third. So if it's a ball hit, you know, hard to the pitcher, a routine to the fielders, it's you have to go. Make them come home for you. And if they throw the ball home to get you and you're out, you can get in a rundown and try to move the runners up to second, third. That's number one. Number two, the other thing I tell them in the moment is any slow hit ball where they can't turn two and you can't score, you have to stay. And that was the ball that was hit in that instance. Buster hit a slow chopper to third. So Belt, recognizing, you know, he couldn't score, and hopefully, you know, they can't turn two because it was hit slow, you stay. Well, Birdie, he got the ball. He checked Belt, and he threw a rocket to second. Of course, Chisholm's got an above-average arm. I look up, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, Buster's not going to make it. They're going to turn two. He threw a seed to first, and Buster, you know, busted his tail, if I'm allowed to say that, and he beat it out. He beat it out, and I had a big sigh of relief because I didn't want him to go. Belt didn't want to go, but they almost turned two. And if they would have turned a double play and we were standing there at third, it would have been a mistake, right? Mm. But it can be a hard play to read because of all the variables involved. But Belt made the right call when initially the ball was hit, and Buster, you know, got down the line. But it was bang, bang, and thank goodness he made it.
Boy, you know, you get a lot of action at third base. You know that? There's always something going on there.
Well, it's a game of inches, you know, and that's the thing. You know, you send the guy home and he's out just, you know, at the last moment, or a double play like that, and they go to review and they call him out, and then it's a bad play. We made the wrong play, right? If they turn two there and Belt was standing there, you know, I stand there with egg on my face with the runner. So that's the game. You're not always going to, you know, be perfect in these scenarios because of the variables. I know it looks easy from up top sometimes, but sometimes it's a little more difficult in the moment.
No, those are bang-bang plays. You got to make those decisions. So, Belt and Slater have been in the middle of a lot of stuff, and so far they've handled it pretty well at third base. Speaking of third base, Flores played third. Well, to me, he looks a little more confident at third. The throws are better. Any improvement for him?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you remember last year, you know, he was primarily playing first and second base for us. And then Longo went down, and we really didn't have a good option at third. And we decided that, you know, he profiles good over there. He used to play shortstop when he started with the Mets. He has enough arm. We put him over at third. And, you know, the lack of reps, it wasn't really a good situation or a situation where he was going to feel confident. Because now you're playing third and you haven't really worked there all year and you haven't played there in a couple of years. So, you know, Kai, number one thing this spring was getting Flo more work at third base and, you know, make sure he gets the reps. And, you know, Flo's a pro. He's out there every day. Even when we don't take batting practice, he's out there with Kai and taking his ground balls at third, and he is more comfortable. And that's what, you know, practice does for you and getting those reps in. And he's playing a good third base for us, and that's great, you know, to have that flexibility with him like we do a lot of the guys. We have some guys, you know, a few guys out of the lineup, but we're able to still put a pretty good lineup out there and, you know, to score some runs. And, of course, we're still catching the ball, so that's great to see.
There was one error last night. LaStella had trouble on the transfer, which you see, I've been watching baseball for so many years. Bill Mazeroski, that ball would hit the glove. You couldn't even tell that it went in the glove. It's a tough play for a second baseman coming across the bag, and there was a bobble last night.
Yeah, it's a tough play. When you're running to the bag and the throw handcuffs you, it throws at your waist. And you're running, it's a tougher ball to handle. I've dropped the ball like that many times in the minor leagues coming across the base. And, the one thing you learn is whenever you can take the throw with your fingers pointed up, where you bend your legs lower, so you turn that throw not into a handcuff at your waist, but you bend your knees down lower and you catch it like you would any other day with your fingers up. It's a much easier turn than having your fingers pointing down and trying to turn a double play. And I think that's where he got the bobble. You prefer to throw to be a little bit higher, but, you're going to get all kinds of throw. You have to make sure the one. He did have a bobble. They went to replay. And the replay showed he never had control of the ball. Sometimes they say, okay, he's taking it out. It's an out at second base. He was taking it out of his glove. But he never had that control and never had that ball secured.
Boy, interesting part of baseball. Well, the Giants have a good game today. Logan Webb, no one knows who the Marlins are going to throw yet. Have you found out anything yet?
No, I haven't. We're still waiting. As of, 10 minutes ago, we still don't know. So Cap's ready for him. He's got a right-handed lineup ready and a left-handed lineup ready. Okay. And I'm sure we'll find out very, very soon. We're trying to get word on who they're going to start.
All right, I'm gonna bring up a crazy idea, and Bill, get ready because I want to get your reaction on this as well. They want more balls in play. They want more action. And I watch these pitchers. They nibble and nibble, and they don't make competitive pitches. So I'm saying, instead of four balls for a walk, make it three, and three strikes. So when you get to 2-2, you got to throw a pitch. You got to throw a strike. When you get to 1-2, you better throw a strike because you don't have that luxury of going 0-2 to 3-2 and forcing this game to go on and on and on. I know it's kind of crazy, but what do you think? Three balls and three strikes.
Well, Marty, you're right. It's got a little crazy in there. but let me say, it's not that crazy because I would have never thought that we would be playing seven-inning doubleheaders, right? I would have never thought that the manager's hands would be tied managing a game when you got a bases loaded, you got a lefty up, and you got a lefty and a righty in the pen, and you call the left-handed pitcher out of the pen to get the lefty. Now he strikes that guy out. The game's on the line, mind you. Now you got a righty. You go back to the pen, and you get the righty. And let the manager manage. Well, we can't do that today. You bring a pitcher in, he has to face three batters. So I never thought that would happen and take away the strategy of the manager. So it's not that crazy. And the last point I'll make on that, and I'm looking forward to hearing Sinker, Slider, Bone Chip's opinion on this one, is we used to do that in instructional league. And a lot of colleges and a lot of scrimmage games are played. You start the inning a little different than your scenario, but with a 2-1 count. And what does it do? It speeds up the game. You get to the action. The pitchers have to throw strikes. And the hitter's got to be ready to swing. So your idea is right along with that, and it certainly would speed up the games, and that seems to be what everybody wants today.
Well, good morning, Coach Wotus. Nice to hear you again on a Sunday morning.
Hey, Bill.
I think an advantage would go to the pitcher. I just think the pitcher would have quicker innings, less pitches on the starters. It's not a bad idea, just like what you talked about, seven-inning doubleheaders. Never thought that would ever be seen in the big leagues. And, that's another point, going into 61 feet now on the mounds, and I don't agree with that one. I just think that's going to hurt arms, and it's going to change the dynamics of pitchers' arms. But the question I wanted to ask you, Coach Wotus, is I love to hear you talk about outfield arms. Now, you've seen the Marlins six games now, and they brought up a young kid, Sierra, playing center field. He has just been outstanding ever since Starling Marte got hurt. But I want to hear what outfielders you run on, what outfielders you think about, and then what outfielders you're like, no, don't go.
Well, with the Marlins here, I don't think it's a secret to them. You know, the one guy that has the weakest arm is Dickerson in left, and you saw that the first game of the series. I think Casale hit a rocket to him in left, and he was playing shallow and had a chance to throw out. I think Ruff was running. He never got the throw off, but we were sending him the whole time because of his arm strength. And, you know, the other guys throw pretty good. You mentioned Sierra Bill. I haven't had a lot of video on him because we just don't have a lot of his throws, but he threw one ball in from the gap yesterday, and he looked like he has pretty good arm strength. We had him with an average arm, maybe a little bit above average. So in the rest of them on their club, you know, Duvall, you know, he used to be with us as a third baseman, first baseman. He made a nice throw to almost throw out Dubon the other night. He's solid average to a little bit above average. But the one thing that you really can't count on is the accuracy. You know, who's I talking about? Duvall's got a very accurate arm. And like this Brinson kid that they have, he has arm strength. He's a little bit above average. They just called him up. But he doesn't have the accuracy. And the only reason I know that is I've seen him over the years. But when you get a new guy, you know, it's harder to rely on some of these reports that you get without actually watching the video and seeing a number of throws. So, you know, you think you're prepared, but sometimes you don't have the right report or you haven't seen enough of them, and the guy comes up with a throw you didn't expect. So that's pretty much, you know, what they have here with Miami.
Boy, interesting. Got a text from our dear friend Greg Papa, who does a great job, says maybe Paul Campbell pitched today and Curtis could be a starter. Well, so those are two guys out of the bullpen.
Yeah, no, he's right. Campbell threw a side the other day. We're thinking that he's the most likely candidate. And besides that, you know, who knows? They could make a move and call somebody up that we're unaware of. But, you know, I'm never going to disagree with Greg Papa. He knows his stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if Campbell's in there tonight.
No. Pop and I text, and Bill does as well with him during the game. It's a lot of fun to talk baseball with him. All right. Well, have a great day today. We'll follow the weather and see what goes on with that. And then it's San Diego next weekend. And we'll talk more about Tatis next weekend, Will. But he's quite a character, and he has two homer games in a row. Pretty impressive for him. So have a great day. And I hope things go well for you.
Marty, great being with you. Bill, it was good having a chance to talk to you. I've been listening to you. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Ronnie. You be careful and be safe.
All right. More coming up. That is the professor, Ron Wotus. More coming up right after this.